So several years ago, my son was at Taylor University in Upland, Indiana, and we would go out for parents' weekend, and Upland is a rural area, and every building, every hotel and motel were booked. And so we stayed at some bed and breakfast. We stayed at one called the Loft Inn, and its claim to fame in Fairmont, Indiana was that James Dean had actually played in that house as a little boy. And we slept in a bedroom where they said, James Dean used to play here with our grandchildren, you know. That was okay, whatever, I just need a bed. But it was kind of cool, right? If you've ever been in a bed and breakfast, you know that part of the event is at breakfast, you have breakfast in a family style with a lot of different people, complete strangers. And if you're an introvert, that's a kiss of death. But if you're an extrovert, that's kind of fun. And, you know, you talk about your kids, you talk about your vacation, you talk about what are you doing here, you know. And sometimes you talk about politics and religion, that ends up bloody sometimes. But in this case, we were there and we were all parents of students at a Christian college named Taylor University. And so we're talking about our kids, we're talking about Jesus, we're talking about our church life. And I said to this one couple, I said, so tell us about your church. And it was kind of like, do you have any relatives that are maybe like Jehovah's Witnesses? And whenever religion comes up, they get real, real defensive. They kind of got real, real defensive. They weren't Jehovah's Witnesses. They were Christians, but they were like, our church, it's different than anyone else's. Oh, okay. So, you know, I want to know. So what makes it different, you know? How's it different? And listen to what they said. They said, in our church, we have no music. I said, oh, like Church of Christ, you don't have an organ, piano, or anything? No. We have no music. No one sings in our church. And I kind of ended the conversation there. I really wanted to ask them why, right? But I could tell they were really uncomfortable, so I left it alone. But I was stunned. Because don't you kind of want to know, what would cause a group of Christians to decide that their worship was better off without music than with music? And I think part of the reason is that music can be really controversial. Have you noticed that? There's a controversial nature to music that is so profound in Christian circles, it has spawned a whole cottage industry of writing books about worship, right? And there are books like this, The Worship Wars, and that belonged to the last couple decades, right? And then if you read The Worship Wars, don't worry, we have the next book, Putting an End to the Worship Wars. And if that doesn't work for you, there's another one called Beyond the Worship Wars, you know? And all those books were focusing on music. There's this conflict about music in Christian circles, but it's not limited to Christian circles. The conflict is beyond that. The Christians aren't the only ones that find themselves on a battleground about music. Just ask my dad when he was living, right? Because I can remember, I would turn on music on the radio, and there were times that my father had a visceral reaction. Do you know what visceral means? It was like a physical reaction, like, turn that off. And I very seldom ever heard my dad say a bad word, but he would say bad words sometimes when rock music was on. He just hated that, and it wasn't a religious thing with Dad. He didn't care about those people's lifestyles. He hated the sound of that music. You can probably understand that, but that's a generational thing. There's another component that makes music controversial, and that's the style component. I like this style, you like that style, another person likes that style. And it's not just like a matter of preference, like, oh, I don't care for that. Do you remember disco? Right? In 1979, a Chicago radio show host, did a promotional event during a Chicago Cubs game. So it was a doubleheader. And the Cubs were playing the Detroit Lions. Nope, the Detroit who? Tigers. I knew it was some kind of cat. Okay? And in between those two games, this rock radio show host was going to put a bunch of disco records in a case at center field and then blow them up with dynamite. That's what was going on there. That's what they were going to do. And so he began to do that, and he blew it up, and a riot ensued. Thousands of people came out of the sands and we're all over, we hate disco, disco stinks. They didn't say stinks, but you get what they're saying, right? And it's just a style of music, for crying out loud. But the riot was so severe that the Major League canceled the second game in that. Wow, style, I think I can understand that. Let me tell you why I can understand that. It wasn't a generation thing, and it's not a thing about my faith. But there are styles of music I cannot stomach. I am my father's son. You may be surprised at what they are. Several years ago, my daughter's going to Houghton College, and I learned that they're going to bring in an opera group from Germany. How more authentic can you get than that? Who's going to do Mozart's magic flute. Who doesn't want a magic flute, right? That sounds good. And so Laurel's like, I would really like to see that. And I'm like, I'm a big boy. I'm an adult. I can go and sit in the opera and enjoy it. No. I cannot explain to you what that event did inside of me. It was horrendous. I wanted to kill kittens. You understand? It just did something inside of me that I could not understand. I couldn't wait until it ended. To say that I hated it is too soft a statement. And I'm not just being dramatic. It really was an issue of style that I could not stomach. And it was all I could do to remain beside my wife. It was only the love I have for Laurel that kept me there. What's up with that? I can tell you, there's a philosopher, an English philosopher, named Thurston Howell III. How many know him? He's a millionaire on Gilligan's Island. Where are you guys at? He's not a philosopher. But here's what he says. There's no accounting for taste. And that's true. There's no accounting for why you like opera and I hate it, and you like disco and I don't like it, and I think that they could have thrown all the recording equipment away when the Beatles broke up, and you don't feel that way. There's no accounting for that. There's no explaining that, but it's very, very real. And unless you skip church over the past several decades, you know that some Christians have made the style of music a spiritual controversy. And when it's related to your faith, all those feelings I just spoke about are sometimes magnified, and often they're spiritualized inappropriately. Perhaps you have seen people demonize some other person, an artist or a singer or someone that shares a church sanctuary with them, because they don't like a particular kind of Christian music that their friend likes. I got to tell you know that breaks the heart of God. It does. But what I want you to hear from this first part of this message is that music is always controversial, or always has the potential to be controversial, regardless of if it's Christian, if it's opera, if it's rap, if it's rock, if it's disco. It doesn't matter. And when I think of that controversial nature of music, I have to ask myself, God, why did you even include it in your worship? I mean, think about it. There are a lot of art forms that we don't celebrate every Sunday in worship. Painting. I mean, look at the stained glass in here. We don't stand here and say, we're going to have someone do some stained glass. Let's all do stained glass as we worship the Lord together. Shall we stand? We don't do that. But music, God has really incorporated into his worship. There's a whole book in the Bible that's probably nothing more, nothing less than 150 songs. Right? There's 66 books in the Bible. All but a dozen of them have a reference to music. Music is mentioned in the Bible just short of 600 different times. In fact, praise is spoken of in the Bible more than prayer. And I think prayer is pretty important. And I think, why? Don't you know about the worship wars, God? Why would you do this worship thing to us? Maybe the church in Columbus, you know, that family at the bed and breakfast were from, maybe they're not so far from wrong, because look at the conflict that music can stir. But there are some really important reasons that God has incorporated music into worship. And I want to just share a few of them with you. The first one is this. Music is a heart thing. It's a heart thing. And you know it expresses the heart and it touches the heart. I mean, help me out here. Think of the places you can find the heart being expressed. Do you know any love songs? What's a love song you happen to know? Help me out. Come on. I got all day.
Like
When a man loves a woman. Thank you, Matthew. That's good. What do you want to hear next? Give me another one. Tim, what do you got?
You are so beautiful.
To me. You'd think the world would have heard enough of silly love songs. I look around me and I see it isn't so. Some people want to build a world of silly love songs. And what's wrong with that? I need to know, because here I go again. Paul McCartney, another philosopher, right? Endless Love by Diana Ross and Lionel Richie. Journey, they made a whole career on, Open Arms. Whitney Houston and Dolly Parton. Can you think of two more diverse genres of movie, or music rather, both singing, I Will Always Love You. And the Beach Boys, God Only Knows What I'd Do Without You. And I really felt like Bryan Adams sold his soul when he did nothing but that kind of music, you know? Right? Because I liked him, but I'm in heaven, right? It is a way we express emotion, we express love, and we express excitement. Okay, get ready. Wow, I feel good! Right? If you're visiting with us, I'm not usually this bad. Okay. All right? I'm worse. Okay, yeah. Excitement. Here we go, Steelers. Here we go. Can you think of a worse melody than that? Right? And music can explore and communicate sorrow. Have you ever loved a woman? Eric Clapton asks. So much. He's expressing the blues express great sorrow. One time, you hear so many things in a freshman college dorm, if it's a Christian college especially, that are just ridiculous. And I can remember sitting in a dorm and someone says, well, the blues can never be used in worship. Nah. Listen to these verses from Psalm 119. Starting verse 25. These are the blues. I am laid low in the dust. Preserve my life according to your word. I gave an account of my ways and you answered me. Teach me your decrees. Cause me to understand the way of your precepts that I may meditate on your wonderful deeds. My soul is weary with sorrow. Yeah, there it is. It's right there. It's the blues. Because music communicates emotion almost like nothing else. And think of how music expresses our hearts in worship. Let me ask you this. What do you think is the most popular hymn, old hymn, sung in church today? And popularity is gauged by how often do churches that sing hymns sing this song. What do you think it is? Take a guess. How Great Thou Art? That's a good guess. Wrong, though. Amazing Grace? That's what I would have said. That's wrong, too. Just As I Am? Nah, sorry. Frequently. We're looking for not how many verses we sing, but frequency, right? Here it is, Victory in Jesus. I heard an old story how a Savior came from glory, how he gave his life on Calvary to save a wretch like me. I heard about his groaning, of his precious love's atoning, and I repented of my sin and won a victory. Whoa, Victory in Jesus, my Savior. Forever he sought me and bought me with his amazing love. He loved me ere I knew him, and all my love is due him. He plunged me to victory beneath the cleansing flood. That is an emotionally filled song that speaks of how thankful we are for Christ's help. And even the songs we sing in this service, the traditional services at 8 o'clock, they sing those songs, and we sing songs like, You're a Good, Good Father. That's what you are. That song is so repetitive. You know, it's almost like Hey Jude, you know, over and over. It's what you are. It's what you are. It's what you are. You're a good, good father. It's what you are. It's what you are. It's who I am. It's who I am. You know, over and over. But you know what? I love that song because it expresses my heart's emotion. It tells me about God, and it draws me to Him. This is amazing grace. Oh, I like that. Communicates that. So one of the reasons that God uses music is because of how it touches your heart and lets your heart sing or communicate. Let me give you a second reason. Second reason is this. Music sticks with you. It sticks with you. Nobody knows this better than advertisers. Can you help me with this? I'd like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony. Thanks, Carrie. I like it. Keep going. I'd like to buy the world a Coke. Yeah. Wow. There it is. That song is as old as the hills, but it sticks with you. Nationwide is on your... There it is, right? Yeah. I hate this one. I absolutely hate this one. You ready? $5 foot long. Oh! I never was so happy for an increase in the price of a sub as when Subway moved up from $5 to $6. I'll willingly pay that extra buck just not to hear that on Sundays when I'm watching football, right? Yeah, because music sticks with you. Give me a break. There it is, right? Break me off a piece of that. What? Yeah, I'm not breaking a piece off for you. That's my Kit Kat bar. There I am singing that jingle, right? Have you ever heard a song in church and it stuck with you? Somebody said to me one time, you know that new song you taught us in church? This is back when I was leading worship. I said, yeah, I don't like that song, but I can't quit singing it. That's good. That's good. I like that a lot. Yeah. And a lot of the music we sing is from the Bible, and it's good to have stuff from the Bible sticking with you. Right? It's good. David says this. He says, I have hidden your word in my heart so I might not sin against you. Yeah. Music helps you with that. Who can right now recite the fruit of the Spirit? Love, joy, those guys. Anybody stand up and do that? You can, Bethany? You don't want to stand up and do it. Who could, though? I'm not going to make you stand up. Who thinks they could do it? Bethany and Laurel. How can you do that? Laurel? We you just sang the song with the children upstairs. I got love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. I got love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. I got love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And the best part, yummy, yummy, yum, yummy, yummy, yum, yummy, yummy, yum, yum, yum. Yeah, that's right. How do I remember the list of the fruit of the Spirit? It's because of that stupid song. And it's not stupid. It's really great if you think about it. Because it's communicating. And it kind of ties in with the third reason God gave us music, to teach us. How did you learn the alphabet? You know the story, right? Some of you know this, some of you don't. I'm going to tell it because I love this story. When my son was little, you know, we had all the letters and stuff, magnets go in the refrigerator. So he was acquainted with the letters and their names, but he didn't know there was an alphabet. And so I was working one time on a ham radio. I had all the transistors. Yes, transistors out of it and the crystals, and I'm playing around. And Tim was always focused on anything like that. He loved that kind of thing. And so he's sitting across the table from me, and I can see him over my glasses. And so I just start singing, A, B, C, D, E. And he'd been looking at the radio I was working on, but now he's looking right at me. Oh, those letters. There's an order to them. And I got, next time won't you sing with me? And I hear this voice, do that again. So I did it again. Do that again. So I did it again. By the time the radio was fixed, he knew the alphabet. Esther, on the other hand, when she got acquainted with the letters, I did the song for her, and she walked away. And then I hear her in the other room, J-R-P-L-Z-W-K. And so I go in and I say, Esther, I said, honey, that's not the right order. That's the order I want them in. That's my daughter. That's my daughter, right? Yeah. No, because they're here to teach you. Those letters are there to teach you. Psalm 136 really demonstrates how music teaches, because this is evidently a public reading kind of thing or worship song kind of thing, where the leader teaches you something about God, and then the people respond with his love endures forever. Just listen to the things that the leader says. Give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. What's that teach you about God? God's good. His love endures forever. Give thanks to the Lord, the God of gods. What's that teach you about him? That he's the boss. His love endures forever. Give thanks to the Lord. He does great wonders. Give thanks to the Lord. His love endures forever. He spread out the earth and waters. And after every one of those, you sing his love endures forever. It's to teach the character of God. And they're using a psalm, a song, to do that. Doing some research for this sermon, I read a little bit about Fanny Crosby. I think Johnny Cash, if memory serves me right, he wrote 2,500 songs. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe let's double it. 5,000. We'll be generous. Fanny Crosby wrote 8,000 hymns. You know some of them. You know, Jesus, keep me near the cross. You know, praise him, Jesus our blessed Redeemer. You know, to God be the glory, great things he has done. I have often thought to myself that Fanny Crosby probably taught more and better theology than a lot of preachers ever do in their whole lifetime. You know? Because music teaches. And she understood that. You know, my kids were little, and as they grew up, occasionally a Sunday school teacher would say, you know, I can't believe how well your children understand theology. Not just Bible content. They get that with quizzing. But they know theology. Stuff about the nature of God, the character. Judy Sunderland used to say that to me. They know the nature of God, the character of God. How do they know that? And, you know, I want to say, I taught them all that, you know. But I didn't, honestly. Laurel might have been teaching behind my back. I'm not sure. But then I got to thinking about it. You know how they know it? They know it because of this We Praise thing. It was a cassette or a record, I think we might have had both, that it had this music machine. It didn't really, but you know, the kids start off the album and say, hey, what's that? It's a music machine. What do you do with it? Well, you put a Bible verse on paper and you stick it into the slot, and out comes a song about that Bible verse. Listen to the titles of the songs my children learned. God Will Forgive. What does that teach you about the character of God? Here's another one. Some invisible things are real.
Some invisible things are real.
What does that teach you about an invisible God? Here's one, ready? We got a powerful God. Okay, so what's the theological word for that? Omnipotent. All-powerful. Here's just a couple more. I won't sing them because I've tortured you enough. God knows everything, that's his omniscience. God is forever, that's his eternality. God is so big, but he's so small, big enough to rule the universe, small enough to live in my heart, that's his transcendence and his immanence. He's here, there, he's everywhere, that's what? His omnipresence. All that theology was right there in that little kid's thing, and it was taught through music. I have that on MP3. I have it just when I feel like I want to be nostalgic, right? There are a lot of good reasons that God puts music into our worship. Let me give you just one more, real briefly. He likes it. He likes it. He likes it. He made it, and it's so sophisticated with scale and timber. I don't even know what timber is except for lumber, and pitch and tone and tempo and cadence and rhythm. All of those sophisticated things God put into something called music because he takes delight in what he creates. And he gave it to us as a gift, really. So let me just give you some pointers. As we come to communion at the end of the service, you can kind of think, how have I been enjoying music in worship? Or have I just been taking it for granted? Or have I kind of missed something? Have I been really single-minded about it? Let me just give you some pointers. About how to incorporate music into your worship. And the first one's really simple, and it's expected. Make music. Do it. Sing someone else's song. Make your own song. If you can sing, sing. If you can play an instrument, play it by yourself, with God, or in a group, whatever. The only time I get out my guitar anymore is, for the most part, when I want to sing to God. And I just enjoy that. And he likes it. You know, when children are small, I know your kids have done this. It's summertime and there's dandelions out there. And so they go out and they pick a bunch of dandelions and they bring them in and they give them to their mom. And the mom, how's she react? She loves them. She gets out a vase and she puts them on the table. She puts those dandelions in there and she's like, oh, these are so nice. Got to be honest, as a husband, I've tried that. Doesn't work. You know why, right? Because that little child is bringing those weeds and they're bringing their best. It's a weed, but it's their best and it's their heart. I'm not bringing my best. I got $40 in my pocket. I can go get a dozen roses, right? That would be my best, right? I wonder if when it comes to worship, music's kind of that way, that some people don't sing because they feel like they can't sing, and maybe they can't even carry a tune in a bucket. I get that. By the way, David Jeremiah says this. He says that if you can't sing, it's okay, because David Jeremiah says God has a filtering system that right before your music gets to his ears, this electronic filtering device kicks in to make it the right pitch and everything else so it sounds beautiful to God. Do you know what that's called? Fibbing. That's what that's called right there, right? Yeah. Yeah. God doesn't need a filtering system because he loves you. And just like that mom loves those flowers, he loves what you bring if it's your best. He's happy with it, so sing. And if you absolutely insist, I can't, I have no musical talent, then just be quiet and enjoy the music around you and allow yourself to participate in that sort of vicariously and enjoy it. So number one, make music. Make it part of your worship. Here's my second pointer. Don't criticize worship music. And I am preaching to the preacher right now because I'm good at criticizing everything. I have a spiritual gift of heartless criticism. I tend to criticize so much. Just don't. Unless it's heresy. But if the message and the lyrics are in accord with biblical instruction, there's really nothing else for you to judge. And I don't know about you, but I tend to feel like everybody needs to know my opinion on stuff like that. And I don't like that about me. That's not a strong asset. If you feel like everybody needs to know your opinion. When it comes to worship music and we criticize that, I think we grieve God because first, we have no business doing it. Here's a verse that should be set to music. It's Romans 14:4. Listen to what it says. It's in the context of when we judge someone else, like someone else wrote a song or someone else does this thing and they're doing it for God. In Romans 14:4 it says, "Who are you to judge someone else's servant?" Whew. That's it right there. Who am I to judge someone else's music, the song they wrote, the way they present it? God says this. He says, to their own masters, servants stand or fail, and they will stand because I can make them stand. Yeah. Worship songs are not written to please human judges. They're written to please God, and he's the judge. So we have no business criticizing anything other than the message. And by the way, I think it's offensive to God, too. I want you to imagine a dandelion scenario, okay? So here's the mom, and she's had a friend of hers over. I'm trying to find a name of someone not in our church. Do we have any Bernadettes? Because this person's going to be a bad person. Okay, so Bernadette, it's good to have you. Come on over. I'm so glad you're here. I made these scones, and I have some coffee. Oh, actually, it's flavored, and it's filled with all kinds of cream, so it's very feminine. You'll like it, okay? Yeah. And so, you know, the two moms are there together. Yeah. That was for all of you right there. Yeah. Two moms are together, and a little child comes in and says, "Mom, I got you these dandelions." And the mom takes them, puts them in a vase, and kisses the little girl. She goes back outside, and Bernadette says, "That is like the lamest group of flowers I ever saw. I can't believe you didn't tell her to take those back outside." Let me tell you what's going to happen. Here's the next thing that's going to happen. "You're never coming to my house again, Bernadette." That's it. Because think how offended the mom would be, right? It's that way with worship. We really have no place doing that. We're going to show a video in just a second. Let me set the stage for it. Aaron Schust is a contemporary musician who really became known by taking old hymns and giving them more modern tunes. "I am not skilled to understand." You know that song? "What God has willed, what God hath planned. My Savior loves my..." That's Aaron Schust, okay? At General Council this past month, when Laurel and I were there, he spoke on the platform. And I want to play this 2.5-minute video clip, maybe 3 minutes.
Fresh expressions of the gospel, fresh expressions of worship are essential in the church. It is no statement against former expressions of the gospel or former expressions of the church or faith. It doesn't have to be an either or. "I like the old hymns." Well, I do too. Aaron, you told me a story recently about, without using names, of a leader in the music industry who was a reluctant leader. Brief story.
I'll keep it brief, but I was praying last night you'd let me tell this. Yeah. A gentleman in the music business, a producer, is the person who's going to be making the record, making a song, you know, saying, let's do drums, let's not do drums, let's make it louder, let's make it quieter, that, all that stuff. There was a gentleman, a friend of mine, who was telling us this story, how he had been in the Christian music business producing for a while, but nothing to do with worship. He just didn't understand worship. He didn't enjoy worship music. He thought it was a little silly. He thought it was a little beneath him musically. And someone sent him a demo of this brand new song, a demonstration, a simple little guitar track of this song that everybody in this room knows now. But then he didn't. And he said he listened to it in the privacy of his own studio, and he just leaned back in his chair. I'll use my vernacular. He basically said, this is rubbish. This is just rubbish. And he said, I've never heard the voice of God audibly, but if I ever did, it was in that moment. And he said, I heard God tell me, how dare you curse what I have kissed? And he said his life was ever changed. And I have watched this gentleman worship in moments when you wouldn't expect people to worship. This guy has become a worshiper. God changed his heart in that moment. We need to be careful to not curse what God has kissed.
Thank you. Wow, that's convicting to me, because I told you my spiritual gift is heartless criticism, right? And, you know, I'll be listening to music and think, I hate that. I ask Laurel, she'll be playing something, I'll say, do you think they could say that phrase like 100 more times, because the past 1,000 times I've heard it isn't enough, you know? And do not curse. Do not curse what I have kissed. Yeah, when he said that was so convicting to me. You don't have to like it. You get that? You don't have to like it. Just don't curse it. And keep your unsolicited opinions where they belong. Right? Let me give you one more pointer, and then we're going to celebrate the Lord's Supper. I'll do this real fast because we're up against it on time. Choose your music wisely. Choose it intelligently. And this applies to secular music as well as sacred music. I think a lot of secular music is great, and I think a lot of it's not so great. In my teen years, youth leaders used to do this thing called backward masking. Did you ever hear that? So they take an album and they play it backwards so you could hear the satanic and evil words that were in there, right? You know? And I can remember saying to my youth leader, you don't have to play that backwards. That's Ted Nugent. I know exactly what it's saying forward, and it's not godly. You know? I loved Ted Nugent's music as a teen, but frankly, telling your girlfriend you have her in a stranglehold is not good. Period. Period. So I don't need that, right? There's a lot of music that I can enjoy that's secular. Choose wisely. And it's the same way with Christian music. I mean, you don't have to maybe be as discerning with Christian music because a lot of it has already kind of been screened, but choose what clicks with you, what helps you grow, and what's working in your heart. For me, that's Rich Mullins. Man, I love Rich Mullins. For Laurel, that's Chris Tomlin. She loves Chris Tomlin. Okay, find out what it is for you and enjoy it and grow through that. A guideline would be Philippians 4:8, which if it was in song, I would sing it to you, but I don't know a song with it. But it goes like this, finally, brothers, whatever's true, whatever is noble, whatever's right, whatever's pure, whatever's lovely, whatever's admirable, whatever is excellent or praiseworthy, listen to that kind of music. Okay, I kind of edited it at the end. It says, think of those things. But doesn't that apply well? Remember the couple at the bed and breakfast from Columbus, Ohio, who went to a church that had no music in the church? What would make a group of believers move to such an extreme position? I don't know. It's not biblical, I can tell you that, because we're supposed to sing. So their position is not biblical. I don't agree with them at all, but you know what? I kind of admire them. Here's why. Because I know that group of believers takes their worship seriously. It's not a casual thing for them. They're thinking about it. I think they came to a wrong conclusion. But I admire the rigor with which they came to such a decision. And as we approach the Lord's table, Think about how music is or is not part of your worship. Think about your critical spirit if you have that. Think about your lazy attitude if you have that. Think about some presuppositions that you've decided to make based on some things that maybe aren't as biblical. And think about how you can enjoy music as part of your walk with Christ and as part of your worship.